It's British Sign Language that is our subject. I want to illuminate what modern BSL reveals about language in general.
My name is Paula Garfield, and I have my interpreter here with me, Cam Dio, who will provide my voice. I was born profoundly deaf, and I am the artistic director of Definitely Theatre. And our whole aim is to ensure that sign language is depicted on the stage, a language that is beautiful and rich and aimed at both hearing and deaf audiences.
In America, people use American Sign Language, which is, again, completely different to, say, LSF, French Sign Language, or RSL, Russian Sign Language. British Sign Language has all the complex components that make up spoken language, but it's a language culture, as well as a language system, with a surprisingly short history as an official language, and its own, well, it's very hard to define, emotive capacity.
I think about the signed flowers as a working example. We can sign the lexical sign for flowers. Or I can sign a flower literally growing in front of you. My facial expression begins to demonstrate to you the intensity and speed of the growth, the smell that comes out of the flower.
The performative nature of signing means that some concepts signed are a whole dynamic experience, like rain, for example.
We can sign the sign for rain, and we sign it in such a way that it's spitting very slowly. And then we begin to puff our cheeks out and add fingers to the actual sign so that suddenly it becomes a storm. Then it slows the actual articulation of the sign, and my mouth begins to get narrower, and you see that it's now spitting, and it has ended. All of that is the sign for rain.
Sign, not word. In fact, BSL bears little relationship to spoken English. It's written on the human body rather than paper, for a start. Still, it does have rules. It has grammar, it has regional diversity. No wonder it commands such interest from linguists. Bensi Wall is Professor of Sign Language and Deaf Studies at University College London.
A sort of nice way to illustrate that is that British Sign Language is unrelated to Irish Sign Language, which is also unrelated to Irish, and of course not related to English either. So what you see in Northern Ireland is that Protestants use British Sign Language by and large, and Catholics use Irish Sign Language, but everybody's bilingual, so they can all communicate with each other. But they're different sign languages because they spontaneously developed in different places, and just as in Britain, dialect differences in English have decreased over time. The same thing has happened with sign languages.
You see, sign languages evolve in exactly the same way spoken ones do, organically, when a group of deaf people get together. Through interaction, repetition, and conventionalization, the language grows and changes. Historical records show the existence of a sign language being used by deaf communities in England as far back as 1570.
Of course, at that time, there was no concept of British Sign Language or French Sign Language. Deaf people themselves just referred to the way they communicated as signing. Of course, when schools did start, that gave sign language a big push because deaf children were brought together in greater numbers, and of course sign languages, like all languages, are the result of children learning and communicating with each other. That lays the ground for the next generation.
With me now is Dr. Kate Rowley, a linguist and British Sign Language expert based at University College London, and BSL is Kate's first language, and her interpreter, Esther Rose Bevan, will be her voice. So, Kate, we're calling this programme Signs of the Times. So the term British Sign Language didn't actually exist until the late 70s. I wonder why that was, given that sign language had been used for hundreds of years, if not millennia.
Yes. British Sign Language has always been around, as you say. But I think people in Britain saw it as a gesture, as not a real language. And it wasn't until the 70s that linguists started to look into these things and said, no, actually, this is a legitimate language. It's a language that incorporates all of those linguistic features. But what is interesting is that a lot of the older generation at the time really were upset when the phrase British Sign Language was coined, because they always saw it as deaf sign. And so it took people some time to explain that the language that you're using just has a name now.
And that's the really crucial point, isn't it? And it takes a leap of imagination for hearing people to get the point that it isn't just gestures or indeed English. It's its own language. And can you give me an example, therefore, which might clarify that in terms of, say, for example, grammar? How is grammar expressed in BSL?
I think people can be limited by their own knowledge of English. English relies a lot on word order, whereas sign language, BSL, has very rich morphology. And a lot of the signs can be inflected to adjust or alter the meaning. And so one sign can have many units of meaning within it. For example, the sign to drink, which is a generic cup-holding sign, but I could adjust it so that I'm a fist holding a flagon. I could adjust it so I'm drinking from a teacup, or I could be slugging the drink back suddenly. And so with all of those, I'm adjusting my facial expression, I'm adjusting the speed of which I bring the implement to my mouth, and that varies with each different sign.
And these morphemes, I suppose we would call them, wouldn't we? These units of change.
Yes, that's right.
I noticed by looking at you are expressed actually in a rather beautiful way that we would call performance almost. You are living the difference and expressing it facially and indeed with your fingers and the angle of them to suggest all kinds of different actions.
And I think you will find that in BSL, it does that because of its rich morphology. But other spoken languages do have that. So, for example, Swahili, which has a rich morphological system, in one word will have lots of morphemes within.
Word order you mentioned as well. As you say, we're rather restricted. We tend to put, for example, the adjective before the noun, a red ball. Is that the same in BSL?
Well, we do use adjectives. So it might be, I would say, the book read and point to the book. When I was talking about drinking before, if you see what my mouth is doing, in one hand it's open and allowing a drink to pour in, but there might be another sign like fast, and I'll do the mouth pattern that goes boop, to reflect fast. Or if something is brilliant, we'll have a mouth pattern that goes fee, that goes with that sign. And so all of those mouthings reflect something of the sign, even though it's not English.
And another issue, which is obviously always fascinating in any kind of language, is the development of slang and argot and all kinds of, you know, demotic and specialist uses. Rapping, for example, and hip-hop artists use language that have developed into the street. Has that been kept pace with in BSL?
Yeah, so there is slang that we borrow from English, like wicked. The sign for wicked has its own sort of sign. It's not a sign that I use comfortably. I feel too old to sort of go around saying wicked. But my son, who's 16, he will. He'll wicked all over the place. There's one sign which is a shooting sign, and it's like, pew! And it means amazing. And young people do that all the time.
Oh, that's interesting. And I notice you, unconsciously or consciously, when you use that wicked, you gave your body a kind of swagger.
So the way that I sign reflects my personality. A shy person might sign smaller. They may be using less body language, less facial expression. And it also depends on the circumstance. So if I'm nervous, I might sign more speedily. But when I'm relaxed, you know, I sign much more comfortably. It feels more smooth. Everything's relaxed. So it does reflect your personality. It reflects your emotions as well.
First of all, I want you to get into groups so that we can warm up. We're going to practice our different times tables.
It's a Wednesday morning at Frank Barnes School for Deaf Children in London, and we're eavesdropping on a maths lesson through BSL interpreter Claire Trigg.
You're going to be in the same groups that you were on Monday.
The children at Frank Barnes are all bilingual with BSL as their first language. Maths is a combination of signs and speech.
Four, five, six.
Six is a closed hand with bent thumb.
7, 8, 9, 10.
But again, although it resembles the English system, the BSL number system is unique and it has regional variations.
People think, oh, well, it must be the same everywhere, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But actually, because most of the systems that are in use are one-handed, they have a lot of variation. So 1 and 2 tend to be the same, but after that, there are some clear differences. Now, that doesn't mean that people from different parts of the country don't understand each other. They just use slightly different number systems.
Danny Siv is the head teacher at Frank Barnes.
British Sign Language is the language that we use for the children in order to access the curriculum and their learning and also their conceptual understanding, social development, emotional development and their communication. They are then able to access English as a second language. English for reading and writing is key.
What is particular to the experiences of deaf children's language development is that many of them aren't exposed to BSL until they reach school.
95% of deaf children are born to hearing parents, and most hearing parents don't sign. So automatically, when a deaf child is born, from age 0 up to 5, that's that critical language acquisition age, parents don't have fluent sign language skills in order to give their child that language. So at school, they then have to catch up with their language acquisition.
But as Catherine Drew explains, she's a class teacher at Frank Barnes, children will often sign before they speak.
When a baby is born, their vocal cords are not developed yet, but they do have their hands so that they can then start to develop their motor skills. And once they've developed their motor skills and their hands, they can then start signing. So a lot of babies can actually sign before they can speak. Then later on, their vocal cords will start to develop and then they will start to speak. And that's why a lot of parents like to go to baby sign groups. And then that means they can communicate with their baby before their baby is able to speak. With a deaf baby, when they are born, it's the same thing. They develop their motor skills in their hands so they can therefore start signing at an early age. But they need to keep signing as they grow. And they then need to continue to develop British Sign Language through school.
Time to sing and time to sign.
Babies can start producing signs as early as 7 or 8 months using baby sign or Makaton, which uses signs from sign language.
Jessie, can you do signing and singing?
Are you signing? Shall we have some food? Food? Show me food. That's good. And organ. Show me organ.
And just as in spoken languages, we modify words for children to help them learn, in BSL, signs are also infant-directed.
Parents who are using signing with babies do the same sorts of modifications. Of course, they look slightly different because the way you can modify sound is different from the way you can modify visual information. But for example, we know that in spoken language, parents will use, you know, baby words. And of course, sign languages already have this very strong sort of imagery component. And so, of course, parents emphasize that. They use very short sentences. They're often very repetitive. It's really remarkably similar process of language acquisition.
Kate Rowley, here in the studio with me. You have two children yourself, a hearing daughter and a deaf son. And did you bring both children up to understand sign language?
Yes. Absolutely. Both my husband and I are deaf, and we raised our children to know both BSL and English. My sister is deaf as well, and my mother and father, and so they had to learn to sign regardless, and so they were brought up using both.
And I guess they have a huge advantage. They can communicate with each other in the company of hearing people and communicate secretly. And
they're both fortunate to have both languages. They both can choose to adjust according to the person that's in front of them. They can sign, they can speak. I think what's interesting for my daughter, because she's hearing, she goes to a CODA camp, which is children of deaf adults, and they do speak to each other, but when they're at a distance from each other, they sign to each other across the room, or if they want to have a private conversation, they settle up alongside each other, turn their voices off and whisper with their hands low and sign quietly. And so it's a huge benefit. If you don't want to be overheard, you've got other choices.
And I suppose also one could go back to the biblical myth of Babel, when we all spoke one language, and then it was the curse was on us and the people spread out, each of them talking a different language. And a common misapprehension, which I hope we can correct, is that sign language is just one thing, so you can go to any country and communicate. Presumably you are as lost in, say, I don't know, Mongolia or in Russia as I would be.
Yes, that is true. If I met, though, another deaf person from another country, there is definitely less barriers.
Right.
We would be able to strike a conversation. And what we would use is the visual medium of our sign languages, and we would find a way to communicate together. Because we grow up using visual communication, we can understand what it means even if the other person uses other visuals. It wouldn't be to the same depth and extent, but we would be able to have a conversation.
It's this ability to express ideas quickly and visually which makes deaf people some of the world's greatest communicators. Bensi Wall.
We recorded some data a few years ago of deaf people communicating with deaf people who used other sign languages. And part of what they had to communicate involved something about a punnet of strawberries. And, of course, there's a BSL sign for strawberries, but it might not be the same sign in other countries. It certainly isn't. And so people kind of launched into these wonderful series of paraphrases. So, you know, little fruit shaped in a particular way with little dots over the surface, or something red and sweet that grows very near the ground that you can sort of mush it in your mouth. And so deaf people are much more skilled at thinking of, you know, 10 different ways to give the concept of strawberry than hearing people are.
There are other delightful linguistic challenges that BSL can rise to with aplomb, like the vast vocabulary for the naming of body parts.
There is only one body part that has not had its moment, and I want to draw your attention to its literally vast potential. It is the camel toe.
Now, the audience at the Women of the World Festival on the South Bank in London isn't just laughing because the ever-taboo-busting Kathleen Moran has just said camel toe. They're also laughing because the visual representation for this is being creatively signed on stage.
Darling, take this in the right way. Can you show me your camel toe? If every time I say camel toe, she's doing that. I can't compete with that level of physical comedy genius. This is...
Search carefully online for Kathleen Moran's Ode to the Camel Toe to see what I mean. So clearly, actions are sometimes better than words. Certainly funnier, and with nothing lost in translation.
All human beings are able to understand the sign of the heart when you trace the shape of your heart on your chest. You know this. Even as a hearing person, we can all understand that.
Paula Garfield via Camdeo. In 2012, Paula and her team from Definitely Theatre produced the first ever translation into BSL of a play whose central theme is heart-shaped, Love's Labour's Lost.
We then used two hands crossed over your heart, which most people can understand as love. We used the universal sign, which is your fingers actually portraying the shape of a heart positioned on your chest. You know, if we were really, really, really in love at that particular moment during the play, we would add facial expressions and repetitions of movement of that sign away from the chest two or three times that indicate intensity as well as the intensity of your mouth.
Using a mixture of vernacular BSL and what linguists call iconic sign language, each pun and piece of wordplay had to be carefully extracted and re-spun in a visual language.
There was a moment where there are two characters flirting with one another and they are attracted to one another. But Cupid is supposed to fire an arrow, and as it's approaching its target, the target moves out of the way and, of course, the arrow misses. You know, the character is rejecting Cupid's attempt to make the character fall in love. So what we did was we changed that joke. We didn't use words. We used a visual representation of an arrow flying at a different part of the body. The comedy of the moment where they move out of the way. That was a way of translating that particular portion of the text.
BSL users naturally use gesture, facial expression and eye contact to add emotional colour to what they're saying. So it's a perfect language for drama and storytelling.
It's a language that I have a particular passion for because I learnt sign language as my everyday vernacular language. It's my mother tongue, but it's also a language that was used by my mother when she would sit us down in front of her and tell us stories.
Cam Dio, whose voice we've just heard as Paula's interpreter for this programme, is a CODA. That stands for Child of a Deaf Adult. He was born hearing, but BSL is his mother tongue.
My mother was in India for a while, and she was very young, and she was telling me that she was in the village in India, and as night was falling, some of the villagers were attempting to tell her that it was very, very important that she shut the front door of the, I suppose you'd call it a hut in English, that she was staying in, that she didn't. And she woke up in the middle of the night, and as she was staring out of the door, there was, sitting on its haunches, what looked to her like the world's biggest dog. And as she signed this dog, she took on the characteristics of this animal. It's seared into my memory, you know. The length of the muzzle, the ears, the eyes, the way that it was staring at this thing was frightening and terrifying. It's a story I'll never forget, because if somebody had told me something as simple as that story in spoken English, it has no impact. But when I see it in sign language, I'm transported back to that moment. I'm there, I'm present. And the emotions and the morphology of the signs, everything that's taking place in that moment is being reenacted almost perfectly.
And this applies to some extent to BSL's visual idioms too.
So in English, we might say that someone is blind drunk, and in BSL, we might sign they're staggering around, but it's an expression. It doesn't mean they're actually staggering. It means they're drunk. And to concentrate is to wear blinkers, which, of course, in English is a kind of negative thing. But, you know, having your hands like horses' blinkers, that means you concentrate. You can't look around, and deaf people have enhanced peripheral vision. So it's a really nice image that if you want to concentrate, don't look around.
But BSL can do a whole lot more than that. For example, it can get very personal indeed.
So I am Claudia. Oh, that's my sign. My sign name is the same sign for cat. My name is Verone, and this is my sign name, so it's like a V on the side on my cheek.
And so to onomastics, the study of human names. One unique element of sign language is the personal sign name. Your sign name tells the world something about you, but it's very personal. You don't get to choose your sign name. You don't even get power of veto. It has to be given to you. Adam Shembury is a reader in linguistics at Birmingham University and is what's known as a bimodal bilingual. He speaks a spoken language and signs two sign languages, Auslan, Australian Sign Language, and BSL.
Traditionally, sign names were something that you develop over time from mixing with deaf people. Deaf people may observe something about your appearance or your behaviour and create a name sign based on that. Now, when I first started to learn Auslan, I noticed there's a sign which in BSL and Auslan can mean to be surprised, but it also is used in conversation as what's called a back channel, as a way of showing that you're paying attention to someone else talking to you. Like, oh, really? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And it's basically your hand with all fingers extended and slightly bent at the knuckles, as if to make a claw, and it taps the middle of your chest twice. Now, I used this sign when I started to learn to sign, like a typical language learner. I saw this pattern and I overused it. And deaf people noticed that I was doing this, and I developed the sign name from this sign. And this name refers specifically to me as an individual, and it's used to refer to me when I'm not around. That's one of the differences about sign names, is they develop like nicknames, but they can sometimes be a little less than flattering. deaf people, through observing your behaviour, will notice this thing about you and they'll create a name sign based on that. But the interesting thing is, of course, this sign has different meanings in other sign languages. So that same sign in American Sign Language means complain. So people immediately think, oh, Adam's a bit of a complainer. And the same sign, I believe, in German Sign Language can mean ill. So, you know, people say, oh, were you ill in the past? So it's often very fun to explain my sign name to signers of other sign languages.
Kate, could you name me? What would you think would develop as a sign for me?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because with sign names, they can be different ways that they'll be created. So it might be a name to do with your actual name. So it could be Fry like a fry pan. We could also attribute it to a physical characteristic. So one I noticed is your fringe. Oh, yes. Because you've flop. Always had the same fringe style.
That's, I'll take that, my Duke of Windsor flop, as it used to be called. That's really pleasing. And so when people come into the public domain and become incredibly famous quickly, does the community develop a simultaneous shorthand for them?
For example, like with Madonna, when she came to fame, mm-hmm. it was the outfit that she had with the cones on her chest.
Oh, yes, the Jean-Paul Gaultier cones.
Yes, yeah. So that's her sign name, is the cones. Okay. So, yeah, famous people do get sign names as well. Or Donald Trump. Is a big sort of comb
you're
over.
You're doing the flapping hand on top of the head.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
Now, of course, all this is suggesting rather that it's just a parlour game, and it isn't a parlour game. It's a rich language. And I wondered if there are examples of what you might call poetry, a way of expressing truths about the human condition, about life and so on, through sign language, which is more than just plain communication, but which has a depth and a richness that we associate with art forms.
Yes, there is. More and more now, deaf people are creating their own BSL based, playing with the rhythm of the facial expressions, the hand shapes, etc. It's extremely beautiful when it's done well. The contemporary poet Paul Scott from Bristol does beautiful work. It's not dissimilar to the way that in English you might use rhyme. We use repeated hand shapes. And he created a poem about the deaf self. It's called The Five Senses, and he does it on the fingers. So there's actually four. So the eyes and the ears, for deaf people, they join together. So the eyes are the ears. For deaf people. And so he brings those two fingers together, and it's a beautiful poem.
Well, I could talk to you and watch you replying all day, but it's been a real pleasure, and thank you very much for talking to us, Dr. Kate Rowley.
Thank you so much. It has been a pleasure to meet you, Stephen.